Well, Reed, Lindsay, we have to end it there. We've come to the end of the program. We'll continue to report on Haiti this week here on Democracy Now! Reed Lindsay speaking to us from Port-au-Prince. And that does it for today's broadcast. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Sharifa Bokadush, John Hamilton, Anna Nagara, Elizabeth Press, Yoruba Richin, Maddie Harper, Aaron Mate. Mike DiFilippo is our engineer. You can video and audio podcast our show at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
And at 5 minutes after 6 o'clock, it's 5 minutes late for Off the Wall. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Apologies for the late start, even though it wasn't my fault. I don't really know what's going on. The computer seems to be busted again. Very ingenious way that the news is being played. In case you wondered why it sounded like it was coming through a tin can, it almost was. For some reason, the computer wasn't feeding into the board, so someone just set up a microphone to be plugged in right next to the computer, and you just had to be very quiet in the studio. So when I saw how late the news was running, I had to go outside to cuss. I wasn't able to do it right here. Little sacrifices like that. And, you know, I hate doing something stupid like I just did. About to go on the air, turning the microphone on. What do? I open up one of these little candy things, these Werther Original, whatever. You know, the things that you have in your mouth for about 10 minutes after you... the wrong time to open that up. So now I've got this candy thing in my mouth that's not going to go in, unless I swallow it, but that's probably not good for you. So bear with me as I deal with this. I'm not going to throw it out either, because, no, I'm just not going to do that. Plus, I'd probably have to touch it, and then I get all sticky. No, that's not an option. We'll just have to get by. Almost a full hour this week. We've been 45 minutes the last 2 weeks, and I guess we'll be more like 55 minutes this week, or something like that. Thank you, everybody, for kind words, writing in, sending virtual fruit baskets or whatever, as I was getting over whatever I had last week. And I'm pretty much over it, I think. Giving it to a whole bunch of other people. And, you know, people even wrote in to say, yes, I agree. Getting sick is just the right thing to do if you want to avoid the bird flu, because then you'll be immune from it. And you know what? Maybe I was right. Wasn't planning on being right, but sometimes it sort of happens by accident. In any event, we're still bird flu free here, so maybe we're doing something right. But there are lots of other people who aren't doing things right, many of them in positions of great power, and that's what we seem to focus on an awful lot here on this radio program, and I guess this week won't be that much of an exception. New country that we bombed. Yes, Pakistan. You heard about this, right? We bombed Pakistan last week. This is unbelievable. I saw the story on Al Jazeera, Yeah, the terrorist news network. I mean, that's what people think around here. Because they're Arab, because they present another point of view sometimes. But they still have a stock ticker, so they can't be that alternative. I think here at WUSB, we're more alternative than Al Jazeera, because we don't have a stock ticker, and we don't tell you about the traffic or the weather. Well, we do sometimes with the weather, only when it's interesting. And it's not very interesting now. It's not cold enough. We had some ice on the ground, but now this winter has not been good so far. But enough about that. Al Jazeera reported that there is this airstrike on Pakistan by the United States, and it was one of these stories that just seemed to be so unbelievable that it just had to be just bad journalism, sort of like what we're programmed to believe we would read if we ever ventured over to a site like that. They were reporting women and children killed by this American bombing in a country that supposedly was friendly with us. Well, what do you know? A day later on CNN, the story broke, and that's when everybody here started to pay attention to it. Basically, there was an American airstrike on a village in the northwestern region. And apparently what they were doing, they were attempting to kill this guy, the new number two of Al-Qaeda, or whoever number two is this week. It's like episodes of The Prisoner where it changes all the time. But this guy, Ayman al-Zawahiri, apologies if I'm pronouncing your name wrong. Ayman al-Zawahiri. Because they listen. They do listen. We get letters and they correct us if we pronounce things wrong. And when Al-Qaeda corrects you, you try to get it right. All right, let's just not refer to that name anymore. The number two leader of Al-Qaeda was the target of the strike. And guess what? He wasn't even in the village. But 18 civilians were in the village, including six children. And the Pakistani government has lodged a formal protest. Okay, that's great. Formal protest. That's going to do you a lot of good. Something has to be done a little stronger, a little bit more emphatic to prevent this kind of garbage, this kind of nonsense from continuing. Because it seems like there are those in our government in positions of power who think the world is their playground and they can simply go and bomb anyone at any time, for any reason. Now, I'd like to read some of the quotes from various American leaders reacting to what happened here. It's a regrettable situation, but what else are we supposed to do? Says Senator Evan Bay. Senator Evan Bay? I don't care if I pronounce your name wrong. It's like the wild, wild west out there. The Pakistani border's a real problem. Yeah. What else are we supposed to do? Yeah, we killed 18 innocent people in a friendly regime. What else are we supposed to do? And Senator Trent Lott, who just today announced that he was going to be running for another term after speculation was that he would do exactly the opposite, changed his mind. His comment on the bombing in Pakistan, I would have a problem if we didn't do it. Absolutely, we should do it. Senator John McCain, we have to do what we think is necessary to take out Al-Qaeda, particularly the top operatives. This guy has been more visible than Osama bin Laden lately. We regret it. We understand the anger that people feel, but the United States' priorities are to get rid of Al-Qaeda, and this was an effort to do so. I can't tell you that we wouldn't do the same thing again. Now, someone please tell me, how are these people any different than those maniacs who blow themselves up or who guide airplanes into buildings because they want to kill somebody in that building who is an enemy. Or blow somebody up in that crowd who they consider to be a target. The collateral damage of innocent people, well, you know, it's regrettable but necessary. Please tell me what the difference is, because I don't see it anymore. I used to see it, but the way these people are talking, they're doing the exact same thing. They're sending missiles into villages, thinking that maybe they're going to kill a bad guy, and okay, if we kill a bunch of innocent people, that's okay. We'd do it again. We'd have a problem if we didn't do it. My God. Are we into some kind of mass hypnosis or something where we're all kind of turning crazy and we don't realize it? But seeing these quotes, it just floors me completely. You always have to apply logic to other sides, other people, and see if it makes any sense. And so if you apply this logic to some other government, some other group of people, and insert various other characters in the position of the innocent people, ask yourself, is that right? If some government someplace has a problem with some guy who happens to be in Washington, D.C., in one of those official buildings where all the officials hang out, is it okay to take that building out to get that guy? Yeah, you kill a few senators, maybe even kill the president. They're people too. They should be treated the same as every other person on Earth. They're no better, they're no worse. Well, okay, they're no better, let's put it that way. Leave it at that. If that doesn't make sense, if that seems wrong, then it's wrong to do it to a bunch of innocent villagers as well. And these people just can't seem to get that through their heads. What's it going to take? What's it going to take to wake them up? Oh, you know, I'm glad this came up because the music, that is, not the horrible story we're talking about. So I was sitting at home earlier, and I have iTunes randomizing, and for some reason this Halloween medley by Electric Hellfire Club came up. And it just put me in such a good mood. I don't know why. So, damn, this candy is not getting any smaller, is it? Anyway, so if you don't mind, I'm just going to have it on for a little while. Might cheer me up a little bit. Maybe not so loud, though. A little lower. Okay, that's good. So yeah, bombing Pakistan now. So we're bombing Pakistan, we're bombing Iraq, we're bombing Afghanistan, and now maybe we'll be bombing Iran soon. There's talk of that. And again, this is something where you switch the people around a little bit and ask yourself if it makes any sense. Now, yeah, the guy running Iran right now is a certifiable lunatic. I don't doubt that. He's a nut. And his name's very hard to pronounce, too, but I'm going to try. President Mahmoud Ahmad. I've heard it on the news enough times, I should be able to say it. But I can't. Ahmadinejad. I hope that's something close. Anyway, this guy has been he's a work of art, let's put it that way. His comments about Israel and the Holocaust and all that, put that aside for the moment and just look at the most recent developments where he's basically moving full steam ahead with the country's nuclear program. Now, this is where it starts to get a little complicated. Because you have a country that a lot of other countries don't like. They feel uneasy about. But what the guy is saying makes a degree of sense. Every country has a right to pursue technology in some way. Now, developing a nuclear weapon, that's one thing. Developing nuclear power, well, that's supposedly something else. That's what they told us, after all, when we were battling the nuclear power plants here in the United States. Oh, don't worry. It's not the same thing as nuclear weapons. Big difference. But now, all of a sudden, if you pursue nuclear power and you're in an unfriendly country, it's the same thing as nuclear weapons. Now, I don't like the idea of this guy having access to anything nuclear, but it seems like we're kind of pushing them into a position where that country has no choice but to pursue that. You know, if you tell somebody, we don't trust you, and we're not going to treat you as an equal, even if the person is not trustworthy at all, they're going to want to do whatever they can do to get away with however much they can get away with. And that's what's happening here. So while I don't agree with what they're doing, I understand why they're doing it. And so many of life's little problems, if you simply look at it from that perspective, you don't agree, but you understand why they're doing it, you might actually be able to reach some kind of a compromise. You might be able to actually communicate on the same level. That's not happening here. That's not happening here. We have a situation where one side says something, another side says something even more fervently, and it's just it's escalating pretty quickly. It really is. So, it's quite a situation. And I don't know what we're going to do next. But Iran is planning a Holocaust conference. That's really going to be something, isn't it? The president there has denied the Holocaust. And has said that it will... He has said that they will hold a conference to examine the scientific evidence concerning Nazi Germany's extermination of 6 million Jews. Basically, he claimed the Holocaust is a myth, called for Israel to be wiped from the face of the earth. Yeah, you know, how many of these things, though, would have been said if there wasn't this this kind of atmosphere, this poisonous atmosphere that's taking place? Sometimes people say the most horrendous things just to get a reaction. And I have to wonder if that might be what's happening here. Anyway, holding a conference, that's going to be interesting. That's a way to really curry some favor here. And what else? Yes, Republican and Democratic U.S. lawmakers have said that there must be major immediate diplomatic action on Iran's nuclear activities and that the option of military action cannot be taken off the table. Let's go back to Senator John McCain, who everybody loves to quote. This is the most grave situation that we have faced since the end of the Cold War, absent the whole war on terror. Nice save there, John. The Iranians showed their face when their president came to the UN and advocated the eradication of the State of Israel from the earth. We must go to the UN now for sanctions. Well, it's going to be interesting. But there's a bit of hypocrisy there, because nobody has a problem with Israel having nuclear weapons. And they certainly have expressed interest in wiping certain places off the face of the earth. There are certainly many people there who do, who share that sentiment. So you can sort of see in that poisonous atmosphere why someone else might be prone to pursuing it themselves. Don't agree, but I understand why they're doing it. So the Iran situation is something that just keeps getting a little bit weirder every single day. And no doubt there'll be more to say about that. But yeah, you know, they're talking about military action in Iran. And that's going to be very different than Iraq. A lot more opposition. And there's been quite a bit of opposition in Iraq so far. More than I think the U.S. has ever planned on. And it's incredible, too, how the number two guy in al-Qaeda seems to be sort of helping Bush along. You know, when Bush started to basically cave into demands that we start bringing the troops home, you know, very, very slightly. Okay, we're going to bring home, you know, 10 or 20,000 by the end of the first part of this year or something. Very vague like that. Now, what do we get? We get an audio tape from al-Qaeda saying, from the new number two, "This proves that the Americans are losing. Bush is surrendering by doing this." It's like nothing could help Bush more than having those words coming from the enemy. So you have to wonder just how closely coordinated these two sides really are. It doesn't seem very smart. It's like Syria bombing all those places in Lebanon, being the prime suspect, and then looking bad in front of the whole world. It's the dumbest thing ever. You have to wonder, are they really that dumb? Or is something else going on here? I always think something else is going on, so we'll just have to wait and see on that one. But another story that showed up on Al Jazeera and then later showed up in the American media, the Iraq war is going to wind up costing the United States trillions of dollars. Trillions. Yeah, that's quite a number, isn't it? I'm going to read a little bit from this piece here that showed up actually on the 10th of January. Saddam Hussein was an oppressive and evil regime, but what people can't ignore is the fact revealed by the 9/11 Commission in its final report that Iraq was not involved in the planning or execution of the September 11th attacks and did not have a collaborative operational relationship with Al-Qaeda network, believed to be responsible for the attacks. So again, the war wasn't launched for the set of lies presented by the U.S., by the U.S. president, that is, in the run-up to the invasion. A new study co-authored by a Nobel Prize-winning economist found that the illegal war in Iraq is likely to cost the United States between $1 and $2 trillion, far above Bush's administration's projections. The research released last Monday by Joseph Stiglitz of Columbia University, a 2001 Nobel Prize laureate and former chief economist at the World Bank, and economy professor Linda Bilmes of Harvard University, further noted that the current official assessments of the war cost fail to consider key expenses expected to burden the U.S. budget in the coming years. It mentioned the increasing medical expenses to treat more than 16,000 wounded military personnel, accelerated depreciation of military hardware in the battlefield, and the ripple effect on higher oil prices on the U.S. economy. Before the March 2003 U.S.-led invasion started, the then White House budget director, Mitch Daniels, predicted that the Iraq war would be an affordable endeavor, rejecting other experts' estimates of total war cost at $100 to $200 billion. He said those would be very, very high. But Stiglitz and Bilmes wrote, even taking a conservative approach, we have been surprised at how large these figures are. We can state with some degree of confidence that they exceed $1 trillion. My God. In January 2003, before the Iraq War was launched, the U.S. President George W. Bush said an attack by Saddam Hussein or a terrorist ally would cripple our economy. This economy cannot afford to stand an attack, Bush said, and I'm going to protect the American people. The economy's strong. It's resilient. Obviously, so long as somebody's looking for work, we've got to continue to make it strong and resilient. But the result is the war has crippled the American economy and continues to devastate the once strong Iraqi economy. Well, even if only half those facts are true, it's still unbelievable. I mean, think of what that money could have done in this country. And to have it all wasted. Well, of course, certain companies are making vast amounts of money, and we know who they are. The ones involved in contracting out, rebuilding infrastructures in other places, building new weapons, that kind of thing. Those guys are making out like bandits. And finally, some people are speaking out. It's pretty late in the game, but finally we're starting to see something. And let's just hope it's the beginning. We had former Vice President Al Gore yesterday giving a rather angry address, calling what the Bush administration is doing a gross and excessive power grab, saying our Constitution is at risk. Gore said the use of the NSA to eavesdrop on Americans without a court order shows that President Bush has been breaking the law repeatedly and persistently. A president who breaks the law is a threat to the very structure of our government. Gore said lawmakers specifically refused to give Bush the power to eavesdrop on Americans when they authorized the use of force after the September 11th attacks. He said the wiretaps, combined with Bush's assertion of the power to hold American citizens indefinitely as enemy combatants, the authorization of harsh treatment of prisoners, and his use of signing statements to declare how he will interpret a law passed by Congress, have brought our republic to the brink of a dangerous breach in the fabric of the Constitution. The disrespect embodied in these apparent mass violations of the law is part of a larger pattern of seeming indifference to the Constitution that is deeply troubling to millions of Americans in both political parties. Now, of course, the Republicans are, or some of them anyway, not all of them, but some of them are responding in that robotic way of defending anything that their leader does. Republican Party Chairman Ken Mellman said Gore is more interested in desperately trying to get attention than he is in focusing on the facts and the law. This is authority the president does have. It's authority that is consistent with protecting our Constitution and our civil liberties, and it's an authority that is critical to learning the lessons of 9/11. Okay, that's an interesting way of looking at it, but not much was said beyond that. Gore said the dangers of unchecked executive power can be seen in the war in Iraq, which the administration warned was necessary because Iraq was concealing chemical and biological weapons and trying to produce nuclear arms. No such weapons were found after the March 2003 invasion. And get this, he even quotes George Orwell, author of 1984, who wrote that people are capable of believing things that aren't true until a false belief bumps up against solid reality, usually on a battlefield. 2,200 American soldiers have lost their lives as this belief bumped into a solid reality, he said. And indeed, whenever power is unchecked and unaccountable, it almost inevitably leads to gross mistakes and abuses. Amen. And he also said, in spite of our differences of ideology and politics, we are in strong agreement, referring to other leaders in the country, including Republicans, we are in strong agreement that the American values we hold most dear have been placed at serious risk by the unprecedented claims of the administration to a truly breathtaking expansion of executive power. Yeah, you know, I hope that wakes people up. Because these really are perilous times that we're living in. You see these things happening, and it may not seem to affect you right away, but believe me, it will. It will down the road. When these constitutional rights are simply evaporated. They won't be there in the future. And Senator Hillary Clinton, listen to some of the things she said yesterday. Sort of like a coordinated attack here. On Monday, she blasted the Bush administration as one of the worst in U.S. history and compared the Republican-controlled House of Representatives to a plantation where dissenting voices are squelched. Oh, way to go, Hillary, finally. Speaking during a Martin Luther King Jr. Day event, she also offered an apology to a group of Hurricane Katrina survivors on behalf of a government that left you behind, that turned its back on you. Her remarks were met with thunderous applause by a mostly black audience at the Canaan Baptist Church of Christ in Harlem. The house has been run like a plantation, and you know what I'm talking about, said Clinton. It has been run in a way so that nobody with a contrary view has had a chance to present legislation, to make an argument, to be heard. We have a culture of corruption, we have cronyism, we have incompetence. I predict to you that this administration will go down in history as one of the worst that has ever governed our country. And the robotic reply from the RNC people, on a day when Americans are focused on the legacy of Martin Luther King, Hillary Clinton is focused on the legacy of Hillary Clinton. Well, we'll see about that. And even if she is, she still happens to be right. So give it your best shot. That's what we have to do. We have to raise our voices. Don't worry about offending people. Enough people are pissed off enough as it is to not an agreement. It's unbelievable. Okay, so we have all this nonsense going on with wiretapping and mail being opened and read, people being sent to prison camps, countries being invaded, friendly countries being bombed. Every week it just seems to get, it's like we add a new one every week. Pretty much coming up with a huge, huge list of offenses. We'll just be able to read them off one week and not even comment on them because there'll be so many. The FBI is complaining. You know what's bad when the FBI is complaining? They say the National Security Agency began sending a steady stream of telephone numbers, email addresses, and names to the FBI in search of terrorists. And that stream soon became a flood, requiring hundreds of agents to check out thousands of tips a month. And virtually all of them led to dead ends or to innocent Americans. The FBI repeatedly complained to the spy agency that the unfiltered information was swamping investigators. The spy agency was collecting much of the data by eavesdropping on some Americans' international communications and conducting computer searches of phone and internet traffic. This is all fallout from the illegal actions of Bush. Some FBI officials and prosecutors also thought the checks, which sometimes involved interviews by agents, were pointless intrusions on Americans' privacy. Meanwhile, Bush has characterized the eavesdropping program as a vital tool against terrorism. Vice President Dick Cheney has said it saved thousands of lives. And I'd like a little bit of what they're smoking, because it must be pretty good for them to believe that. Well, let's go to fiction. Fiction's always a lot more fun than fact, isn't it? They started up 24 again. We've had 4 hours of it since Sunday. They basically just started the series on Sunday with 2 hours, ran it Monday with another 2 hours. And boy, it's just as silly as it has ever been. I know a lot of our listeners watch this program out of amusement. And for those of you who don't, it's basically a story about this this superhuman counterterrorist agent, or former counterterrorist agent, who basically is presented with these impossible situations. And he has one day, hence the name, 24 hours, to deal with all these crazy problems that pop up. And they are crazy. Every week is another hour. And what we had, and I'm going to give some things away, so if you haven't seen it and you care, you might want to tune away at this point. But basically what we have had so far is the assassination of a former president as he's standing in a window. Now that's, you know, that's pretty big news right there. But that's only the beginning. The protagonist, Jack Bauer, who is the counterterrorist agent, who's supposed to be dead, by the way, because he supposedly died last year. But he didn't really die, you see. He went into hiding because there are some evil people in the government who wanted him dead, so the only way for him to survive was to make them think he was dead and then to escape someplace and start a new life. Well, that didn't quite work out because his ally, the former president who was assassinated, pretty much brought him out of hiding when he realized that everybody who knew that he was still alive was also being targeted. And I think there were a total of 4 people. Well, it turns out that the other people being targeted were simply a cover so that he would get framed for the murder of the president. Meanwhile, the current president, who's this incompetent boob, yeah, you know, sometimes fiction is based on fact. All he cares about is his image and wanting to sign this treaty with the Russian president, who happens to be in Los Angeles. Why everything always takes place in Los Angeles is beyond me. I don't know. Nothing ever happens there, president-wise. But they're always there. And they always keep going back there, despite all the horrible things that happen, season after season. So all he cares about is signing this treaty. Now it turns out that The president who was assassinated was trying to contact the wife of the current president to let her know, I don't know why, that something big was going to go down. He doesn't tell her then. He just says he's going to tell her the next day. And of course, he's dead by then. So she has this information that's only partial. Nobody believes her. Records are being doctored inside the White House because there's a mole there. And then these, I guess they're supposed to be Chechen terrorists, take over an airport terminal and start taking hostages and start killing the hostages and demanding that the treaty not be signed. But the president is obstinate and says he's going to sign it no matter what. Well, that all plays out. Our protagonist is in the middle of it all, of course, manages to rescue everybody. And that's when you find out that the whole thing was just basically a cover so that they could move some biological weapons or something from the airport terminal to someplace else. All of this within 4 hours. it makes you laugh. And that's, I think, why I like to watch the program, because it makes me laugh. The warped perception of how time works. You ever get across all of Los Angeles in 2 minutes? Well, they do. Either that or everybody lives across the street from where they work. And just watching their fake newscasts, you know, all they're talking about on the fake newscast at the end of hour number four is that the historic treaty has been signed. You have a president that's been assassinated. You have an airport terminal that's been taken over. You have hostages being killed. And all they focus on is the most recent thing that happened rather than the big news of the day, which I think would be pretty much dominating. I have to wonder if there are people in power now who watch this fantasy and think that it's based in reality somehow. Because just judging by the things that they're doing, the things that they're saying, the complete lack of connection to reality, it's got to be something like that. So please, to the producers of this program, think about who's watching this. Might want to just insert something subliminal in there and get some sense out there to the people in control. And yeah, the media does get it wrong a lot of times, as we all know. Last week, and this isn't our fault either, by the way. We were just reading the copy. Just reading the copy, we're innocent. We talked about the bomb in Starbucks. I have the story here, in fact, that we read last week. Patrons at a Starbucks in San Francisco almost got an afternoon jolt on Monday. Yes, we commented on that too. But police defused a makeshift bomb in the bathroom without causing any harm. Found a suspicious device. When the bomb squad unit arrived, officers determined the device was an explosive and evacuated nearly 100 people. The device was disabled an hour later. The police sergeant of San Francisco said that if it had gone off, it could have caused serious damage and injury. Well, guess what? It's not true. It's not true. What authorities thought was a bomb in a Starbucks coffee shop turned out to be a flashlight casing. Now, this story happened a week ago today, and that wasn't announced until Thursday. That it wasn't a bomb at all. A forensic analysis revealed the absence of any explosive material. Flashlight casing. Police initially said the device found in the store's bathroom Monday was powerful enough to seriously injure or kill someone if it had exploded. And a man arrested on suspicion of planting an explosive device was still being held on an unrelated burglary charge, but the police said his explanation on how the flashlight ended up in the coffee shop was credible. Supposedly, the flashlight was filled with corroded batteries. You know, even I know what a corroded battery looks like. How in God's name do these things get so out of hand? People find a flashlight in a bathroom, and all of a sudden it turns into a bomb and it gets reported that way, and it takes 2 days for the truth to even come out. And meanwhile, everybody thinks that Starbucks are the target still. I think Really, the only thing that ever happened to a Starbucks was that one stone that got thrown through a window in 1999 in Seattle. I don't think anything else has ever happened, yet Starbucks always gets the royal treatment as far as protection from evil things happening to them. Let's take a look at a bit of listener mail, because we like getting that as well. By the way, a bit of an admonition here to listeners. Please email the right address. I can't tell you how many people are emailing off the hook when they mean to email off the wall and vice versa. It's not hard. It's not hard to email the right place. OTW means off the wall. OTW at 2600.com. If you email OTH, it's going to go to the other radio show, and it's going to confuse a lot of people. And please don't email both of them. There's very few things that we do on both shows, but if it really is pertinent to both, well, I'm sure there are different angles. You know, we take more of the ranting and raving angle here and the world news angle, and over there it's more technical and internet-related and phone-related and that kind of thing. Okay, let's take a look at what we have here. Dear Emmanuel, just a thought. Think of how it would be if the public got to drill our presidential hopefuls in the same way that the Supreme Court nominees are. Unable to really dodge questions, all past events of their lives examined and brought up. Better yet, think of how our current president would have been slaughtered with questions in the last election by the bloodthirsty American public. Signed, Jesse from Grimes, Iowa. Jesse, thanks for the imagery anyway. Here's a listener from Melbourne, Australia. I wish I could go to Amsterdam thanks to you guys. What a fantastic way to celebrate the new year. We are also not allowed to have or discharge fireworks any time of the year. However, in the state of New South Wales, it is legal to purchase and use fireworks, so some people bring them over the border to have a bit of fun around Christmas and the new year. The Hacker Conference also sounded great. Well, definitely should try to make it next year to the CCC Conference in Germany. That's always fun. Hey, Manuel, great show. I especially enjoyed it when you were on your round-the-world trip, which is when I really started listening to Off the Wall as well as Off the Hook. Anyway, sorry to bother you about this, but I was wondering if you could give out or slash remember the website you booked your freight ship journey on. I found one or two sites by searching, but they look a bit sketchy, so I was hoping you could recommend the one you used. Signed, Andrew. Well, Andrew, the site I used, if I remember correctly, was called Travel Tips. And I think it's traveltips.com, but it's not spelled like you would think. It's spelled without an E, so you would spell that T-R-A-V-L-T-I-P-S, and I think it's .com. They're based in Queens, and they seem to be quite reputable. I dealt with them. They did all the necessary paperwork, and next thing I knew, I was in Japan getting on a freighter on my way to Long Beach, California, and it was really pretty cool. I would recommend that kind of a thing, well, to most anyone. There are people, I guess, who would be driven crazy by being on the high seas for 10 days. Not a whole lot to do, but if you're good at meditating, thinking, reading, watching videos, and sleeping, you'll do just fine. You really will. But it involves a lot of change. It involves changing the way you think, the way you're brought up. Do you know I still have that candy in my mouth? My God, hang on, I gotta crunch this thing. It's gonna last forever. These things last an hour. My God, I didn't know they lasted that long. Okay. Boy, that was annoying. But yeah, you know, Americans are just, they're really uptight about so many things. I mean, I don't have to tell our listeners this because I'm sure many of us are aware of the problem. But even among the people who are enlightened, we still buy into the same nonsense. Like, this happens to me every time I go to Amsterdam. I always hang out with people in Amsterdam, and it's great. And Germany, too, for that matter. But everyone is nervous about things being discovered, about what they might have done when they were away. You know, those things that aren't quite legal here. But we all agree that it's stupid. The whole culture is stupid that demonizes these things. I'm talking about things like, you know, smoking a joint or something in a foreign country, inside a place where everybody does that, and nobody is freaking out or hurt in any way by it. But, you know, there are so many people who are, oh, my God, I can't do that because it might show up on a drug test in 6 months. Or if they do indulge a bit, you can't tell anybody. You can't tell anybody that I did this. Like, you know, it's some kind of a horrible crime. You know, like it's murder or something. The whole thing's pretty outrageous, if you ask me. And for some reason, our cassette deck has stopped. I have to go investigate this as yet another piece of malfunctioning equipment. Listen to this PSA while I go check that out.
Did you know that trees can increase property values as much as 20%? The shade from the trees could save up to $175 per year in air conditioning costs. This message was brought to you by the 8th grade students at Murphy.
Okay, well, that was my fault. I put a 45-minute tape in when I should have put an hour-long tape in. So that means I'm not recording the show. Hopefully it's being recorded someplace. Wow. I'm losing my mind. But yeah, you know, it's getting back to the uptight Americans. It's just, it's so annoying because everybody complains about how things are here. And yet we still keep buying into it. We're still worried if someone finds out how that's going to affect our lives. Instead of just standing up and saying, you know what, this is wrong. And I'm going to go on the record as saying I believe it's wrong. And I don't care. I don't care if you think I'm less of a person for that. That's how I feel. Rather than simply keeping your mouth shut about it. That's how these evil things happen. That's how these evil things become the way of the land. Didn't used to be this way, you know? Didn't used to be so restrictive and full of fear. Used to be quite different. I'm not saying it was perfect, but it was better. And it can be better again, but it's going to involve people doing things about it. It's going to involve people taking a risk, taking a stand, speaking up, not being cowed into submission. Because that's what's always happening. And it's frustrating watching it happen. Yeah, I don't know how I got into that, but boy. It's just frustrating. Do we have any more listener mail? I didn't bring a whole lot today. Oh, but I do have this story. I do have this story, which I almost completely lost. You know how in South America, all the people being elected now are really causing the Bush administration to quiver. Got Venezuela, you got Bolivia, socialist elected in Chile the other day. Well, the U.S. government has blocked a planned sale of 12 military aircraft from Spain to Venezuela on the grounds that the planes contain U.S. military technology and cannot be transferred without approval from Washington. Yeah, these are the kinds of tricks they're playing to get their way. They don't like Venezuela. They don't like the leader of Venezuela, so they're going to basically use a technicality. There's American technology somewhere in that airplane, and you can't sell that airplane because of that. Because we all know Venezuela is planning on invading the U.S. with these airplanes. The move was made amid concerns that the United States has about Venezuela's government, considered authoritarian by the Bush administration. Certainly an expert on that subject. Spain reacted by pledging to substitute the U.S. technology on the planes with other technology so that the deal could go through. Spanish Deputy Prime Minister Maria Teresa Fernandez de la Vega. My God, how many names do you have? Let's say it all together with the title. Spanish Deputy Prime Minister Maria Teresa Fernandez de la Vega. Oh, wow. That's like a paragraph. I'm sorry. I'm getting away from the purpose of the story here, but my goodness. I like it. No, I think it's good. I think we should have long names and long titles. You know, sort of like those Russian stories. That way, you know, you don't have the same names repeated all the time. Anyway, she said at Spanish Deputy Prime Minister Maria Teresa Fernandez de la Vega said at a news conference after the weekly cabinet meeting that the sale of the 12 military airplanes should be carried out. They only used 4 words of that as a quote. Her name took up 100 words, and they only used 4 words of the quote. The U.S. officially informed Spain of the decision on Thursday. Spain has argued that the planes were not for offensive military purposes, but were part of a military equipment package that also includes patrol boats. The boats were unaffected by the U.S. block. Depending on how the planes were configured, they could possibly have contained a significant amount of U.S. military technology. Relations between Bush and Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez have soured in recent years, and the discord has grown since Bush began his second term. U.S. officials have expressed concern over Chavez's policies, his friendship with Cuban President Fidel Castro, and his crackdown on the news media, whose owners have largely opposed his rule. In notifying Spain of the decision on Thursday, the U.S. government repeated a previous Bush administration claim that Chavez, while democratically elected, uses his country's democratic institutions to impose authoritarian rule. Oh, my goodness. Is he really doing that? Is he really saying that? Unbelievable. The real thing is, you know, if you make friends with Castro, that's enough to really have you condemned. Big time. And now that the latest leader of Bolivia is basically going down that same road, you have to wonder just what Bush is planning for South America now. As if this is even a threat to our regime. How is Cuba a threat in any way? Yet it's illegal for us to go there. Illegal for U.S. citizens to travel freely to this country. Other people all around the world are able to do this. We can't. We're not allowed to. Who's covering up what? Okay, well, we have other news, but I think we've pretty much made the point that we're going to hell in a handbasket here, aren't we? It just never seems to stop. Hopefully we'll have some more cheerful news, though, in the weeks ahead. I'm looking forward to something a little bit different. Until then, try to stay awake. Again, write to us, otw@2600.com. That's the only email address you should use to write to this show, and we'll be back again next week. Have a good night.
Thousand treacherous miles to Archangel by sea. 2,000 years in a hole at the base of a tree. 2,000 possible levers to pull, but there's only one lever to pull that'll ever deliver the Eskimos high. And there's only Senators a break from the jail. 1,999 of them will fail. Only one inmate survives, and he says that it's always improper to laugh at misfortune unless that misfortune's your own. Thousands of questions are asked every day to which answers will never be known. And then when you are dead, you become just a box full of bones.
Hi, this is Albert Collins. When I'm out in Stony Brook, I'll be listening to WUSB FM station. When I want to listen to some good blues, that's the station you tune into.